Rashi tells a story about Rabbi Schwab. Rabbi Schwab was speaking about the heights, and shul's in the heights. The Breuers is the shul on the other side of the heights. So Rabbi Schwab was the rabbi of the shul in Breuers, you know, many years ago. So Rashi was once in the Breuers sukkah, and a man comes over to Rabbi Schwab and says, "My daughter broke her leg. Should I take her to the hospital?" So Rabbi Schwab started screaming at the guy, "You idiot, get to the hospital right now, whatever, fine." He started, made a big fuss about it. So Rav Schechter asked Rav Schwab, "What were you doing?" He said, "The halacha is that Yerushalmi says, quoted in Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Chav Chet, that when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbat, ha nish'al megune, the person who is asked looks pretty bad for him. Va'sho'el shofech damim, the person who waits to ask the shayla, should I be mechalel Shabbat, should I break Shabbat to go save this person, he's spilling blood, because you could have saved him in that time." So Rav Schwab said the minhag in Europe was that the first shir series the rabbi gives when he becomes the rabbi of a community is about pikuach nefesh on Shabbat, how to save lives on Shabbat. So the reason is because he doesn't want this situation to happen. Hanish'al Miguneh, the person who's asked the question, it looks very bad for him because it means you didn't teach them properly. You didn't teach them what to do. Your job is to teach them how to handle these things. So you should teach them right away. The first thing you teach should be Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbat before you go on to teaching about Saparos, Shchita, all these wonderful, Yala V'yavo, you know, Kain Tal Matar the Racha. Leave that alone. Pikuach Nefesh comes first. So what we're going to do for a few minutes today is leave our new module for a minute and just discuss briefly some topics, not halacha lemaaseh, but to break the ice a little bit about pikuach nefesh on Shabbat, as unfortunately we learned this past few days what that could mean in really intense situations. So I wanted to just point out and tell you a little bit of a story and then show you a few cases that came out of it. Simply so. Certainly there's no judgment being passed about anybody in this stories I'm going to tell you. It was a literally unbelievable situation. But just because it's hard to think about it in the moment, it's easier if you prepare for it. We'll talk about it now. And Be'ezrat Hashem, it should never be needed. It should be zechut for you know, going for Am Yisrael. But in the meantime, we'll discuss it as it's a responsibility of Amore to make sure that you know what to do. I have two brothers-in-law who are spending Simchat Torah with us in New Jersey from Eretz Yisrael. One of them is a Ben Eretz Yisrael. He's learning in the Grus Kol in YU in Yerushalayim. He just got married a month and a half ago, and he came with his wife for Sukkot to spend time with the family in Chutz Laaretz. So they're only keeping one day. He was a Chayal maybe 5-6 years ago. Not even signed up for Miluim, but strong, able guy, down to fight. Fine. I have another brother-in-law who's here right now. He was here. He was here in YU, first semester, Eftak in Rosh Shechter's year. My chavruta at nights, also, sometimes. And he was keeping 2 days, because his plan was to spend, you know, time in America, 3 years of YU, even though my in-laws have already made Aliyah and everything. This guy is here. He's not really part of that group. He's here. He's keeping 2 days. He just finished the army 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, a week before the other one's wedding. He finished the army. So he was in Golani Sayeret, which is like some advanced unit in Golani. So he is a machine gunner on a tank, on an Amer. And Shabbat morning, in the shul we were davening in, there's a Hatzalah guy who's a big macher. He loves to talk to everybody about everything, whatever's going on. He's also that. He's involved. So he tells one of my brothers-in-law, not these two, another one, who's Hatzalah guy, they're good friends. And he says, "You know, there's a war." And he says, "Oh, things are going crazy." Okay, fine. Shabbat afternoon, we're in shul again, and a goy pulls over and tells the same Hatzalah member brother-in-law, not the Chayal, "I don't know if you know, I'm so sorry, I know it's your holiday, stuff is going on, I just knocked on my neighbor's door, they have a daughter in seminary, and I told him what's happening, and I'm in tears." Can you imagine finding out what's happening on Shabbat? I'm sure you experienced a little bit. Imagine your daughter's there, there's no way to talk to her. It's probably pretty terrible. So then we find out more information from the Hatzalah guy, from other people, and we find out some more information, and my brother-in-law, the Chayal, asks the rabbi, "Should I go check my phone? Shabbat afternoon, should I go check my phone?" So we're just discussing some inyan adayoma before we start a new topic. So kind of like shir shel yom. Yeah, I guess it's not really a shir, more like a tzedakah, but yeah. So the rabbi probably wasn't thinking, and he told my brother-in-law, check after Havdalah. So we start walking back to where my brother-in-law was staying for just a break before Mincha, whatever. And I realized as we're walking, this guy's a chayal, there's a war. What check after Havdalah? You should have gotten in the car at shul, driven to the house, and checked your phone. So 20 minutes later, half an hour later, we get to the house, instead of 2 minutes. Checks his phone. He has a WhatsApp message from the army. Where are you? We've been calling you all day. Where are you? It's not even they didn't even have his American number. They had his Israeli number. That's not working anymore. They called my mother-in-law in Israel. They called my sister-in-law in Israel. Where is he? They got his American number. What's happened? Where are you? So he responds.
Was he arrested?
Wasn't arrested, but he's there now. And he responds, I'm here in Chutz Laretz. Send me a ticket. If you need me, I'll come. So until they confirmed that we need you, until he got the ticket, took a good 6 hours. Meanwhile, he was like very mentally, you know, going through a difficult time. He's very scared. Sitting there waiting, yes, no. The other brother-in-law, who was a chayel 5-6 years ago, took out his phone also. Yom Tov eventually ended for him. He was only keeping 1 day, the other one was keeping 2 days.
That's why the rabbi said, no, he'd still enjoy Yom, otherwise it would be
3 years.
Well,
it's like only 1 day.
What joy Yom Tov? Go save a life. 5 hours it took to get a ticket. Imagine if he had picked up his phone sooner.
It also was like the second day of even if he was in Israel, he was a soldier at one point.
Doesn't matter if there's a chance they're going to call you.
On top of like things. Like, yeah. It's a question on if we're maybe going to have a second.
Right.
It's like on top of already being on the first day. It was already some sort of like, the arms already anymore.
Yeah.
And you were in the army. You were like, it was.
When there's even a 1% chance of pikuach nefesh, the halacha says, chachamim v'talmideim, not women, not children, not goyim, the rabbis have to be the ones to be mechal shabbat.
Yeah.
I would have driven my brother-in-law, had I had my brain on, when I heard the rabbi say this, I would have driven my brother-in-law from shul on Shabbat afternoon to the house to check his phone. The Chavetz Chaim, Shech, always tells a story, the Chavetz Chaim was asked by two different people, you know, there's a world war coming. I want to be able to afford tickets for my family to leave Europe, but I can't. I don't have enough money. Can I work on Shabbos? To make money to buy a ticket. Chavetz Chaim told one person yes. Another person went and asked the Shaila and he was told no. So he's like, what do you mean you told that guy it's okay? Because that guy truly believes he can save a life. You're just asking because you want to work on Shabbos. But if there's a sveika that you honestly believe that you can save a life here, have to be mechal shabbat. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. So my brother-in-law was sitting there, Leil Yom Tov, Sunday night, waiting for a ticket, waiting for confirmation, and I told him, you're making a mistake. Get in the Uber now. You told him you're going from Newark. Get in the Uber now, or I'll order the Uber for you. Go to Newark. Wait. When the ticket comes, who knows if you have an hour or three to spare. Get on the plane right away. Be there. Be ready. So he was not mentally ready to go, so he didn't go. But the halacha is, shoel shofech damim, hanishal meguna. You have to tell the person, get up and go. I'll drive you to the airport, and I'll stay with you. What? So my wife will have to be with the kids. Who cares? But you have to get there. You're a chayal. You have to fight. So he didn't listen to me. And I left. I was sleeping somewhere else. I woke up for Netz, 5:30, and then I left. At 6 o'clock, he walks into where I was sleeping, where he had left some of his stuff, tells my wife that he came to get some stuff, he's getting on the plane now. So it's Baruch Hashem, he didn't listen to me, because the flight was moved from Newark to JFK. He would have been stuck in Newark the entire time. And questionable if he would be allowed to take the Uber back from Newark. Probably could take an Uber back from Newark to Passaic while to wait, but okay, fine. What happened was that the brother-in-law, who was only keeping 1 day, drove him from one house to the other, then from that house to dorms to pick up his stuff, from the dorms to JFK. Yeah, on Sunday morning. He's my brother-in-law is an FTA, first time on campus.
Wait, your brother-in-law was in the army?
Yeah, he's just finished the army.
Is it how old is your brother?
It's 23, 22, 21.
That's crazy. 21
probably.
He's shipped off right now.
So he flew Sunday morning on Yom Tov Sheni. He flew.
What about Rabbi Berman's son? Is he not his big fly out?
I don't know.
Benny Berman, he's
I don't know him at all.
He's where?
He went back.
You ever send his
email? I didn't read the email, but yeah. It makes sense. So the Ben Chutz Ben, the Ben Eretz Yisrael drove him from Pesach all the way to JFK and then drove back to Pesach. And then the rest of the day was spent, everyone on their phones, meaning the two B'nai Eretz Yisrael on their phones, in front of us and not in front of us, checking the news, contacting family members. So there are a number of important questions, I thought, that are really born out of this experience. And again, not judging anybody. In the moment, it's very hard to think, especially when there's sakana involved. People are losing, you know, hundreds of people. We knew of 450 on Sunday. Now it's 900. Casualties. It's certainly a wild situation, but just to review the halakha, what the halakha says a little bit, I think is valuable. So I wanted to go over with you what are some of the questions. What are some of the questions that that are really important to elaborate? You know,
what we see an Arab industry, we like to kill
them. Absolutely, you don't have to be a chayal to have a license to kill. What are you talking about? You should be a chayal. You should be a chayal, but you don't have to be.
Even in America,
even if there's a 0.01% chance that you're killed, it doesn't matter.
Only if you truly believe it's pikuach nefesh.
Right. I'm saying, like, if
it's not pikuach nefesh, if I just see an elderly Hamas woman.
No. If she's a Hamas woman, I don't see why not. But okay.
She has a Palestinian flag up there, so she's
not a Hamas. Don't know. Not an army posting. But these things I can tell you. What are some of the shailas that came up? Certainly, there was no shaila, drive from shul to check the phone. That was check the phone, be on the phone, make sure you contact whomever you have to contact. That's obvious, right? You know, what about driving to the airport? Who should have driven him to the airport?
Anyone.
Motzei Shabbat, Sunday morning.
Oh, so immediately.
Immediately, right. Immediately.
Whenever I had to go.
The second
Yeah, you should. I think you should have driven right away, but okay.
Wait, as fast as you could, or you just was like not from Jew?
On Sunday morning, who drove him here and then to the airport? The Jewish guy keeping one day, so it wasn't Yom Tov for him.
No. You said that was another guy that pulled over from the
show. Oh, that was a non Jewish person.
Non Jewish person. Who drives
now. Driving there, anyone could do. Driving back, you can't do.
If
you wouldn't have gone because you would have been stuck, that's Rav Moshe's kula, that we don't want to discourage you from going. Right.
That's part of being a doctor. When you're a doctor, if you're not going to go to work because you can't come back, then you should drive back as well.
So the halacha on the books, is that you can't come back unless you ask a goy to bring you back. That's the basic halacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein thought that doctors won't want to go to work anymore. Yeah. So therefore his shita, and only his shita, is that you could drive back also. So certainly a lot of people who follow that in America, in Eretz Yisrael, and even in Pesach, it's much more common to have a non-Jewish driver drive the ambulance back, and he meets the ambulance wherever the ambulance is.
I'm saying the doctor is going to have to be with the head of their, I think my sister is the head of her, wherever, the hospital.
Yeah.
She has to go.
Yeah, so some people hold that kravosha and some people don't. It's a big machlokas. When you're Hatzalaga, you drive back. It's Hinek, whatever, the whole machlokas, yeah. So, yes, it's a ravosha. Ravosha says drive back. In Eretz Yisrael, depending on the situation, all the nurses are not driving together to the hospital. They have a taxi that comes and picks them all up in a van, and then they all go together. But they, certainly,
that's dangerous. You don't want to have them all together, because then if you destroy that woman,
that's for regular hospitals, not chayalim. Regular hospitals. That's also a shaila. How chayalim should travel? Should they travel together on a bus? Travel separately? Maybe we'll get to that soon. But at least for now, so Rav Moshe's shita is you could drive back. Certainly, that's okay. But Rav Moshe's shita is only for regular medical assistance. I'm a doctor in this hospital. I'm going to stop wanting to go if I know it ruins my Shabbos every time I have to stay in the hospital. How many times is there a war in Gaza that I'm going to say I'm not going because I can't drive back? How often does that happen? I don't think Rav Moshe's kula necessarily applies immediately in this case. Because it's not happening that often. Rav Moshe's point is that you wouldn't want to go because over time, I'm going to stop wanting to take calls on Shabbat because I hate it. One time.
What is his
chiyuv? He can drive himself.
I know, but then whose car is he's just leaving
the car? He leave the car there, ask everybody to turn it off, take the keys, hold on to the keys, whatever. That's peripheral. It's annoying, but it's peripheral. You're right. Even if I drove from the shul, let's say, to the house where the phone was, I can't turn off the car. Find the car in the streets, turn off the car, bring the keys inside. But that would be what you'd have to
turn on the car and park it on the side. What?
That's what you would have to do in Achinami, yeah.
Just leave it running in the street?
If you pull over a little bit, yeah,
no,
I think so.
There's no way. That's
a... But idling your car is not a pikuach nefesh.
I understand, but that's a boundary of like someone between doing it and not. If that's like between you not going... Okay, because I'm going to leave my car on the street, and like, I can't afford
right.
not to like
right.
lose a car.
You're driving to, let's say, your house,
parking
in front of
or to the airport,
drive it into the parking lot, put it in park,
and then
ask someone else to turn it on. That's pikuach nefesh. Not putting it in park is pikuach.
You park it and saying you can't keep the kid turned off.
What do you have to turn it off? In a moment, I don't think that there is a pikuach nefesh issue there, but you can ask a goy to turn it off for you. That's fine. This is not regarding regular medical assistance on Shabbat. This is a unique, narrow situation that never occurs. So I'm positing, I'm not a posek, can disregard everything I'm saying, I'm positing that some of the leniencies actually don't apply here. Because me, the non-chayal, who's driving him to the airport, let's say, I don't have to turn off the car.
Well, this Kyle, what if he's going to let drive him? He has to go, it doesn't matter. He's going to, that person, I would assume, is going to take the car, drive to the airport, go put it in park, whatever, keep the keys either with him, leave it somewhere, just like do everything he needs to do.
Right, so when it comes to chayalim, it's a special halacha. The halacha says that mima'atin b'shiurim, whenever we have to mechal shabbat, we have to minimize however much for mechal shabbat. If I need an apple off of the tree, I have to pick off one apple instead of chopping off a branch, because that's a bigger kotzer to chop off a branch. I have to do the lesser avera, right? Lesser avera. Whenever I need kosher meat, so I go shecht an animal, salt it, wash it, do it, cook it, and then feed you the food.
You just eat it while it's
alive. Just find something in your refrigerator and eat it, right? That's what you have to do. We minimize as much as possible. That was an extreme example, but that's the point. I'll give you an example. Halacha lemaase. 12 years ago, 2012, there was another Gaza issue flare up in November time around Thanksgiving. So there were, back then the rockets did not get to Yerushalayim. One of them got towards Yerushalayim to Hadassah. That was it. They didn't get as that far back then. So they hit Kiryat Malachi, they hit random places in Negev. They did not get to Tel Aviv for the most part. There were sirens, but they never got that far. Iron Dome was brand new. It was great. So you could see the Iron Dome. It was like, oh wow, beautiful. It was a different world back then. So there was a shayla. The chayalim were told on Erev Shabbat, drive down to the Negev to some base, and together you're going to get on a bus from the base and go to Gaza, to go to the border. The thing is that base is surrounded by Bedouins, and the Bedouins will probably take all their cars for scrap metal. Can they all drive their cars from the base instead of getting on the bus and go to the border? That way their cars will be safe.
So they're going to lose their cars?
The Bedouins... The non-Jewish Bedouins would break apart their cars and use them for scrap metal. The people in Tatooine, basically, are going to come out. Yeah. So, maybe.
Right.
Star Wars, literally. Yeah. Same. Java. Good. Right. So now they, the Shaila was, can all the Chayalim, now it's Leil Shabbat, they got their Erev Shabbat, they want to go to the border, can they take all their cars or not? I mean, Ma'atin Bishiyurim, we have to minimize one person driving a bus as opposed to 50 driving individual cars. Halacha says drive. Because when there's a milchama, Chayalim in a milchama don't have this Mimatin Bishiyurim restriction. We want them to be totally focused and not be concerned for their money or for other things.
So, like, hypothetically, they would be watching Netflix on the flight if it was...
It would help them relax to be able to fight? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, I'm talking about, like, when it was hot, or, like...
If they, it would help them relax.
Or Shabbat, even, like, let's say they're going to the base, but, like, they got 5 minutes while they're traveling.
Yeah.
They could just be watching Netflix on their phone or something.
If it helps them fight, I could hear an argument. I don't know if it'll help them, though.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, my brother-in-law had to sleep on the plane. I imagine he had to rest up a lot on the plane. I don't know what he did. One second.
Wait,
let me just finish this point.
More minutes to sleep on the plane.
No, but like, let's say help him go to sleep. You know, maybe he can't fall asleep. If I watch Netflix, I'll fall asleep. I'll be energized, land, and go to the buses. He actually went home first, but or he went to yeshiva first, whatever. But still.
I heard hearing ahead for soldiers to smoke on Shabbos.
Yeah.
Fighting because it helps them.
Yeah. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. Even if it can be unnecessary. So let me just finish this point. So I was in Shalvim at the time. And someone asked the question, the basis where the cars are is not a target of the missiles. Maybe only Sderot and the surrounding where the missiles are hitting, that's where the milchama is. And Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, other places.
All over.
Huh?
All southern Israel and all.
Right.
Tel Aviv.
So back then it wasn't as wide of a range. So it could be maybe the places that aren't in range where the missile isn't actually falling right now even is not part of the milchama. So someone asked Rav Schechter this question. A rabbi for the tzava asked Rav Schechter this question. And Rav Schechter answered, classic Rav Schechter answer, the milchama started in 1948 and it hasn't finished yet. If you look in Bikvei Hatzon, in Rav Schechter's second sefer, Bikvei Hatzon, there's an article there called Hamidina v'milchamota, where Rav Schechter posits the milchama started in 1948 and it continues. And all the halachot of milchama apply. You don't have to be specifically in Sderot where they're falling in order to be b'torat milchama. Anyone who's a chayal, who's doing something in active duty, is called a chayal, and all the halachot apply. So what were your questions?
Oh, yeah. So basically, so let me remind this first. There's something where if you know that the second Shabbat comes out, you're going to be occupied, you do Havdalah during the day, and then you obviously can't break Shabbat, but
Right. So, what are we talking about? The Pikuach Nefesh or something?
No, I'm saying in general. So, a soldier wouldn't even have to do that, right? They just...
Say Havdalah when you can. Yeah. If you can, you can, you can, you can. I don't think my brother-in-law said Havdalah. I don't remember anywhere. Kiddush on the plane.
Later. Also, how do you do that?
What?
There was one time in my life, that situation, I didn't it wouldn't apply to me, I guess. Like, I had a flight, let's say Shabbat, Literally, Air Shabbat, I make sure the Uber would come,
Right.
So,
you say Hazal of
that. Can you use a flame?
No flame, flame later, and Bissamim later. Bissamim later, yeah.
My question was, if you're flying, if you're a pilot, if you're going to fight, and to comfort you, if your parent comes with you, someone in the company, are they allowed to?
It's a big question. When a woman goes into labor and she needs to go to the hospital, a lot of the times, if she needs this person for her own mental health to be with her, then it's allowed. Yeah. Question is, does she need her mother and her sister-in-law and her grandmother and her great-grandmother and her husband? There's a lot of,
No, then there's another thing. Are you the person going with the pilot? Are they allowed to? What's their rules when they're going? They don't apply now,
if it's necessary, it's necessary. It's not.
I'm assuming you're not allowed to do certain
things. Yeah, there's no heter. What are they going to do? Check their phones.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would be allowed to fly either. I'm not sure. Again, I'm not a posik in these in Yanim. I know a little bit. I want to share the little bit that I know. But
You're allowed to, but I'm just curious how far they go. I know people who get it.
Who flew on Sunday?
There's a parent who their kids.
When?
I don't know.
On Yom Tov, on Shabbat.
Maybe Sunday.
It could be. I know that what happened was my brother-in-law got to the plane. There were 15 chayalim who were going from JFK Sunday morning. and they gave the people gave them a hard time. They didn't get their passport, their boarding passes until 20 minutes before takeoff or something like that. It was at El Al, but but I
try to say again.
Yeah.
Easy time.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. So I think yesterday was another charter plate. My other brother-in-law was keeping one day. So I don't know the details. My other brother-in-law flew yesterday, 3 o'clock. The one who kept one day. He went to do something, or Shmira, something, whatever. So in terms of who's driving to the airport, I asked Rosh Hashanah, should you ask a goy, order an Uber, and you're going to spend probably a few $100 to go from Passaic to Passaic, the other house, to the Heights, to get his stuff from the dorm here in Stranger, to JFK. That's a lot of money. Are you mechuyab to spend that money? I would have bought my brother-in-law a ticket in a second. I offered it. Why wait for the army to send you a ticket? Go now, I'll pay for the Uber and the ticket.
He didn't... Like, you don't have the money to wait. Like, if you don't have that money to waste, then...
Right.
Let's imagine somebody's will on that money. Like, they don't have
right.
$5,000
right. So it's a question. So are you
mechuyab?
Right. It's a great question. How much money do you have to spend for Pikuach Nefesh? That's a great question. The war in Ukraine broke out a year and a half ago. How much money are you chayav to send?
Even, at least for that situation, if they don't spend it, it's still going to happen. Like, if you didn't buy a Uber, you would still be able to drive it.
Right.
Or you can have somebody drive it. So,
Specifically, our question.
How much money do you spend to prevent the
right. Either I drive, or my brother-in-law who kept one day drives, or the Uber guy drives. Yeah, that order an Uber, same thing.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know exactly the details for that question. It's a little bit more complicated because it really depends how much the money is really necessary in both directions. But
these are like, you don't have the option. Like, you're not thinking about all these things in the moment.
Right.
In the moment, what are you doing? You're doing what's easiest to you, what's most convenient to you at that moment.
Right.
So, like, If you're not thinking about, okay, I have to go call an Uber now,
so in our case, the Ben Eretz Yisrael drove. For him, it's not Yom Tov at all. It's just a matter of not doing malacha in front of other people. Here, it's Pikuach Nefesh. Which one's better, send a few $100 on the Uber or have him violate his pretend Yom Tov Sheni? You know, so Shefter Paskin, that they did the right thing. The Ben Eretz Yisrael drove, that was the right thing. You're not chayav to spend all that money to avoid this issue. And then he drove back to Passaic afterwards. He didn't stay in JFK. He drove back to Passaic afterwards.
Going back to Israel?
Then he went back to yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
On Monday.
Did he go back to fight or just not?
I haven't spoken with him, but he wasn't officially in Miluim, but since he was a combat soldier. So I don't know if he actually got a position fighting or if he's going to do Shmira in some place. I'm not sure exactly. He said at least he'll do Shmira wherever they put him. That's fine. That was one issue. What's the other issue? What if he had gone to Newark and then the flight was canceled? He has to stay there or Uber back because there's no Pikuach Nefesh. You don't even know what's going to happen yet. So like,
what is the
buyout? It's a good question. I don't know. I have to clarify this point more. Yeah.
Are you getting another flight? Is another flight in Newark?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe you should just stay.
Yeah, no, if you have another flight there, then you stay. But if they say, okay, now you go to JFK, like, obviously,
right. But should you go to Passaic in the middle? I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know when they told me.
You feel less stressed out about the situation, probably.
Maybe, yeah. It's possible. I don't know what they told him between when I left my brother-in-law at like 10 o'clock on Motzei Shabbat and he showed up at 6 a.m. where I was staying to get his stuff, his ID and other stuff. I don't know.
This is exactly the answer, but just do everything that makes you comfortable in the situation.
Yeah.
Especially like when you're going to fight.
Yeah, I think so.
Because at times the world are completely different.
Right.
You do whatever you need to.
Right. Most likely, yes, but I don't know enough details to like pin it down. Just... Yeah, most likely you're right. Now, a couple other things that came up was what happens if you fly into Eretz Yisrael on the second day? Do you switch to keeping one day? My brother-in-law counts as a chutznik. So for him,
all army people consider that not necessarily.
The brother.
In the army, did they have to live there for the time being? So
one brother-in-law, the one who's here in YU, is keeping 2 days. Another one who's in Gruz Kolel is keeping 1 day. The second one flew after Yom Tov, so it didn't matter anyway. But the first one is keeping 2 days. He got on a plane on Yom Tov. It says Kiddush on the plane. Davin's Yom Tov davening on the plane.
Where is
Ben Tefillin? Puts on Tefillin on the plane. When he lands in Eretz Israel, does he...
I think he's starting to verse it. You do Eretz Israel. Like,
yeah.
He kind of followed that. Like, when I was taking a gap year, I followed one day. Like, it wasn't like
yeah.
an option.
Yeah.
Worked.
Yeah, really?
Yeah,
wow.
No, I thought it was like, as long as you're...
Living there at that time.
So how to paskin 1 day versus 2 days is not what I want to discuss. What I want to discuss is, let's say you're a 2 day person and you land in Eretz Yisrael.
Well, did he have a return ticket?
No.
Exactly. So that's your answer.
Okay.
Well,
I don't think so.
You're living there indefinitely, Rabbi.
I'm saying he's going to be there for 3 weeks or 4 weeks until it's over.
3 weeks or it could be a year. You don't know. You have no idea. All you know is that you are in Israel indefinitely.
I don't think he thinks it's going to be a year. Though. I don't think it's going to be a year.
Did we think last week that this
was right? Right. Right. So,
especially
right. But let's say your psak is, let's say you hold shtark 2 days, no matter what. So you think, should it change in the middle of the day?
Yeah.
I think so? I wasn't sure.
The moment he starts having effect, he's acting as a Ben Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You can say the sovereignty of Eretz Israel.
Yeah. Okay. So, for him, he would have kept 2 days even if he was in Israel. So I don't think the question really applies to him, but let's say you're a person who, whatever the halachic parameters are, line up, that when you're in Chutz Laaretz, you keep 2 days. When you're in America, you keep 1 day. Let's say, when you're in Israel, you keep 1 day because you have an apartment in America. Whatever the situation is, you keep 1 day. Let's say the parameters are such, not in his situation, that you're 2 days in Chutz Laaretz, 1 day in Eretz Israel, no matter what. And you land, your boat gets to the dock, your plane lands on the second day. Do you switch or not? So Rav Shechter thought that it goes by Ben Hashem Ashot. The beginning of the day is what determines how you handle the rest of the day.
Is giving money to the army in halacha considered charity?
Charity in halacha is a very complicated.
Is considered tzedakah?
Yes.
Tzedakah, first of all, master, tzedakah.
Tzedakah is.
Yeah.
Like, if you give your mindset, you give it from your mindset, and those are different things. Like, you give it to the war effort, and
right.
Your mindset is saying those are different things.
I would think so, but I'm not. First of all, take a step back. Tzedakah and halacha is a very...
Charity. Halacha is just charity. Any charity, good deed.
Yeah, but I mean, tzedakah and halacha, the need to give money to charity in halacha is much less, more boring than we make it out to be.
Yeah, 160.
Not even that. It's a matter of a communal obligation. It's a matter of communal obligation to support people. It's not necessarily the idea of maaser is probably a din derabanan, but really most likely it's just a minhag ba'alma. So, for example, Rav Shechter and Rav Ulik say, if you're a single student who has no vocation and being totally supported by your family, most likely the money they're giving you is tzedakah.
So you should
not be giving maaser at all. Until you actually make money.
Yeah.
So like,
that makes sense.
I don't know how much you charge per fish. If you sell them, maybe you are chayav. But
exactly.
But most likely, Most likely, anyone in a yeshiva or kollel environment is not chayav and maaser. So I don't know if you're chayav and maaser. You want
to
ask me? Is it something you can deduct? Supporting pikuach nefesh, something you can deduct from, you know, buying the socks, batteries, toothbrushes, cell phone chargers for the chayalim, is that deductible for maaser? I'm not sure. I have to double check.
I mean, for sure, you need it. You're saying they're literally asking people to do it.
Yeah,
because they need the supplies, and there's
right.
a drive that's happening to send
right.
supplies to Israel
because right. of the flight tonight. Okay, but the rules of maaser could be a little bit more
yeah,
detailed and gritty. But yeshiva tuition. How many siblings are you? So that's your parents were spending at some point upwards of $100 a year on tuition.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, we're very spaced out, but still.
Okay, so overall, they've probably spent over $1 million on tuition by now, right? So, Baruch Hashem, right? That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Is that, can that be deducted from master?
Depends on
what age, because the father luckily has to teach his son.
Oh, so tzedakah until 6 years old. Good.
6 years old, that's right. Not tzedakah because that's an alumni obligation. So, and he's just paying to not have to do
right,
it.
Right.
Well, so I didn't go to school to kindergarten.
You didn't go to?
School to kindergarten.
Okay, fine. But,
so then he failed his obligation.
But,
and
you went to Rambam, right?
Maimonides,
whatever. Maimonides. Sorry, I mixed up the one here in Long Island. But either way, you went to Maimonides. Is the entire day of Maimonides, you know, master deductible? Or maybe just the Torah classes are master?
Course,
you know, did you play any sports in Maimonides? Did you
play
activities and
so
trips?
What percentage of your day is Torah study?
I'm just making the argument.
Yes,
if you're on a team, it's your
really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay, cool. Okay. My point is that not everything is so simply master deductible. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty, but like...
But then when they have a drive, not a drive, when they have a donation, they have 48 hours to donate, they want to make, I don't know, this $1 million, whatever it is, $100,000.
Right.
And 48 hours.
Right.
More. But that, and then you give. You're
right.
You give to the same place.
I'm not...
It's going to the same...
Right.
It's funding the same thing.
Right.
As your tuition.
Right.
So like...
I'm not saying that there isn't any imperative. There certainly is, certainly mitzvahs involved in giving money to these organizations. I'm just, it's the specific question of tzedakah and maaser is such a non-frivolous, I mean, it's so little to it that like it's not necessarily going to hit those bars. It might be, you'll hit other mitzvahs, ya'at al-recha kamocha, chesed, pikuach refesh, so all sorts of great things, but not necessarily, it depends on the situation.
Right,
exactly. Okay.
Whenever the homeless guy from the sign said he money for weed, I always
leave
him. You know, at least he's
honest. At least he's honest. Okay. Now, how does a Ben Eretz Yisrael conduct himself in Chutz Laaretz? A person who's keeping one day, how does he conduct himself on the second day? So what? Yeah. So. So of course it's weird, but.
Like, be yourself.
Can you take out your phone, take out your laptop, turn on the light, turn off the light?
There's a special level, if you're doing it for yourself, you're turning off and on for yourself, but there's also a level of doing things to not, first of all, not embarrass, not make people someone. It's like walking down, it's like a Jewish person who like, with a hat and everything, like
a
religious person going to McDonald's and buying a burger, and is a conservative person who walks by who's...
Yeah.
Maybe like they're trying to keep us like, oh, that's because since they're buying a drink there.
Right.
They don't know the difference.
Right.
Are you allowed to turn on a fire? Are they allowed to use a fire that would be turned on by
only do it for themselves.
Using a fire turned on by somebody keeping... Can you use it? I don't think there's any issur to use it. No. I don't think you're... But they're not allowed to turn it on in the first place.
No, I'm saying if someone who doesn't keep the second, someone who only keeps one day.
Yeah.
In plus large.
Yeah.
And I would keep 2 days allowed to use the...
I don't think there's an Isser Hana. I don't think so. Because he didn't do it. He didn't violate Shabbat, I don't think. Or Yom Tov.
If they're doing it for themselves, and... Well, they leave it on for you. That's like... I don't know.
Not true. So the issue is it has to be not Nikar. It can't be visible. Turning lights on and off, for example. People can see from under the door, through the windows, that you're turning lights on and off. Maybe you could argue nowadays that no, there are timers.
Yeah.
Going into the room and using the computer, who would ever notice, right? Except your WhatsApp says last seen was, you know, whatever. Or they see the message... A lot of people do.
Trying to hide something.
If you don't have a last seen or blue check marks, I don't trust you.
So
it's that simple.
So
who doesn't have blue check marks?
I
get kissing with somebody and they don't have the blue. I'm like, did they see it? Did they not
see
it?
Why
would
I?
Who
do
you know
that
I'm
sneaky? What's up with that?
So,
I don't want people to know
that.
Why?
So certainly in our situation, certainly in our situation. Certainly in our situation for Pikuach Nefesh to figure out what do they need for them to use their phones, figure out what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, and to not necessarily to inform us to make us sad on Yom Tov, but to make sure that, you know, nothing is needed, that's fine. But to sit there and read every news article and to inform us is a pretty bad idea, especially if it's right in front of you. That would not be a good idea. You know, like sitting on the couch in front of you, like saying, like, oh, you want me to see how your parents are doing? Don't say anything. You want me to see how your parents are doing in Netanya? Like, let me just ask them. You know, like,
I think that's also
that was like a bit inappropriate.
Your
you know, yeah, like how I don't you don't have to be miramis to me. No hinting. I'll just do it for you. go use the microwave, go whatever. Like, I don't know if those are the right things to do. Probably not, because it's visible. But what about taking a hot shower? Taking a cold shower and you're allowed to turn on hot water for you. Not for you, but for themselves. They're allowed to do malacha? Almost not at all. It's almost
you're
the same thing. It depends whom you ask. And depends on your boiler setup. Not necessarily a hot shower on Yom Tov. That would not be okay.
Because you're allowed to boil water from an existing flame.
Right, but there's an
existing... The boiler never turns off.
Right, but you're bored. There's an Isser Rechitzar Kol Gufo B'mayim Chamin. Either way, you can't bathe your entire body. That's why a lot of Ashkenazim say you can do one limb at a time.
You
can't take a hot shower.
They take you can't do your entire body. You can go to
mikvah. No one's getting clean at the
mikvah. So, is you're asking a good question. How can you go to a warm mikvah on Shabbat or Yom Tov? So, going to a warm mikvah on Shabbat or Yom Tov is a halachic problem, but it has leniencies built in. A shower... Not so much. Yeah, if you have a dud shemesh, there's a lot more room to be lenient. If you turn off your boiler, make sure to close the valve so nothing else comes in, there's a lot more room to be lenient. But to take a hot shower in Yom Tov is very problematic. A lukewarm shower, okay, we could talk about. A cold shower certainly is okay. So I was wondering, let's say the Ben Ari Tzitzot takes a hot shower in Yom Tov. In Chora, it's fine. Who can tell that he's doing malacha, right?
Steam.
So I was asking your shechter. He didn't give me a straight answer. I don't remember what he said.
The
Rosh Hashanah told me a story, though. Exactly. It could be from other things. If you could justify it. Oh, there's a candle on. Maybe it was on before. How do I know that he turned it on? Oh, there's hot food. I don't know how to use the microwave. Maybe it was on the plata. I don't know. So I'm not saying I know the answers. I'm wondering out loud, you know, what are you really allowed to do when you're...
telling me about stuff that happened 20 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, that I got. Yeah, that was pretty obvious.
You're saying about not trying yourself off really less than... getting a problem.
Certainly the Ben Eretz Yisrael can dry himself off as usual. No one will notice that he dried himself off and wringing a towel or whatever. That's totally fine. Rav Shaltzer tells a story about this Talmid Chacham from Eretz Yisrael who was staying in the Heights for like a year teaching somewhere, whatever, and he said that at the end of the year, the guy left and went back to Eretz Yisrael, and his neighbor, an old widow, asked Rav Shechter, was that guy religious? And Rav Shechter said, yeah, he was a big Talmid Chacham. What do you mean? He was turning on his lights all the time. How could she tell? Because she lived like above him or something, or below him. Yeah. She was above or below the guy, and she could see in the reflection of the neighbor across that guy's lights were on.
That's on her.
So it's important to know. Sometimes people can tell the last scene.
Was
he was a big time of Chacham. Yeah, he was religious.
Why did he turn on the lights?
Because he was keeping one day.
Oh, so
the Rosh Hashanah said maybe he was on Yom Tov.
Yeah,
maybe it was.
I mean, she didn't know. She was a big Yanta. She didn't know.
She didn't remember the exact date.
So all of that was pretty cool. What else came up? Yeah, when Bibi said it was a milchama, said it's a war, so people where we were, in the shul we were like trying to figure out, what does that mean, a war, as opposed to an operation? So what's the answer to that?
Yeah.
Who cares? It's a milchama. Either way.
It's a milchama since
1948. That's exactly my point. Right.
It was just an operation. Maybe as an employee, if you're not responsible for checking things, you're going to call up. When you say, now come on, they're calling in all the Miloim, so you have to be available.
That's a good point. So my brother in law is not even Miloim, he's just fresh out. So like, but either way.
The operation was just like, okay, well, one thing. I have to do this right away.
Right. Yeah, I hear that. They did that. Gemara says that David HaMelech would have soldiers writing Gittin to their wives. Yeah, if I don't come back by a certain date or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
If a soldier wanted to do that,
yeah,
would he be allowed to do that?
Yeah.
to do that for him.
No.
But what if they're taking captive or they're taking captive?
You think captive have ways of finding out if they're alive or dead or not?
But you don't know if
how to do it. Now he's now, she might be an Aguna.
They have ways of finding out they're being kept. They have intelligence. Like they Hamas will very often.
They have little things in their vests. And have a protectors.
They have intelligence. They have a city and they have
hands. Yeah, but I hear your point also.
The reason why is a lot of the soldiers are from the 2000s. Before that, they now have a DNA for a certain area. There's no one dead.
So usually nowadays we don't do the gittin. It's very demoralizing to like do that. Rav Gorin apparently did it in 1948 or 1967. Rav Gorin did do it, but I don't know the details exactly of what happened. So those are some issues that came up. Wanted to just point that out. The point is simply that Pikuach Nefesh is not simple, but in the moment you really have to do whatever you think, as long as there's a Safek Sakana, a true, you believe that you could save somebody, any means in helping them sin, by being Mechal Shabbat, Mechal Yom Tov, and the biggest rabbi has to be Mechal Shabbat, not the women, children, or the Avadim. Simply that is not the way to go. You have to show and demonstrate it's a mitzvah to be Mechal Shabbat, so people shouldn't hesitate. And those were some of the issues that came up. I think we'll end with this. And I'm not trying to be sensationalist or anything. I just thought it was nice to have that anything to this can happen. Just
scroll down all the way. I just saw this yesterday morning. Not much yesterday morning. I took a break from my regular Navi learning for the whole Moed, so I haven't done anything since like before. And I just picked this up yesterday, so it was really cool. Chesed Navi says something interesting. Not a sensationalist, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but this is nice. This is that battery. Anyway, call Mara, the Mara, the Mara.
Is
it
Chesed?
Is it Chesed? Call Mara, the Mara, the Mara. Yara, so to the Shtibi Nikama, Ve'yakun Akam, Bishat, Ve'nefesh. Hashem says the Plishtim came, tried to take a lot of revenge, and it was pretty terrible, right? They destroyed the deck, etc. I'm going to destroy the big city. I'll destroy what's left in us. Hashem will show the world that he's in charge.
Palestinians
aren't Christian. I know.
It's the
same
thing.
That's the point. They're related.
Yeah. But
it's okay, whoever they were.
It's also that you can look at this as a metaphor for anyone.
It could be, it's certain, I don't think this is what Yechezkel Navi had in mind. It could be this Nebuah. This Nebuah happened already, I guess, but if you look one page before, whatever the Nebuah he was talking about there, but Ammon and Moab, the Radak actually says, I don't know when this is going to happen. So, maybe this one also, who knows, maybe it's a Remez, the Plishtim of today, not the Plishtim of old. I have no idea. Either way, we learned an important thing. Hashoel Shofech Damim. The person who asks the question is spilling blood. Vanish'al Mikuneh. One who is asked, it looks pretty bad for him. Certainly I did not cover enough to absolve myself of that responsibility. But I think that we broached the topic a little bit, and the point is to just get the questions going. And you should be able to think about it. When someone dies on Shabbat, do you call the ambulance?
You have to, actually.
He's dead.
Was there a doctor who said he was dead?
You have to declare
him
dead.
If you act, he's vadai dead. Let's say he's Vadai dead. And now you're saying, no, you don't always, always know he's Vadai dead. Okay, fine. Good. I agree.
But it's
okay. We can do certain things to get it onto the ground and prepare. That's about it. There's nothing you can do.
Do you say
no.
There's nothing you can do.
Is there anything that you have to start preparing the body as soon as possible to get into the ground?
No, after Shabbat. So you do Pura on Motzei Shabbat, yeah, but... They do what? No, not on Shabbat. They don't leave on Leil Shabbat, they can't do anything. They do as late as they can on Friday. They vary as soon as they can, just that night, even at 1 in the morning. But other than that, they can't. But here, not to put down the need for calling Hatzalah and to affirm that the person is dead. My point is simply, sometimes people have these ideas in their head that, oh no, he died, let me call all the relatives on Shabbat and tell them. I'm really sorry, it's so sad that he died, it's terrible, but there's nothing we can do right now. Right? There's nothing we can do. It's important to just have your halacha cap on the right way to remember that there are rules. Some of the rules are very generous. Some of the rules of pikuach nefesh are extremely generous, but other times you have to know that sometimes you can't do something. So driving, coming back, whatever it is, all the situations to keep in mind are important. And be'ezad Hashem, it should be a zechut. At least we started talking the topic. It should be a zechut to not have to talk about it anymore. And those who need the refuah should have the refuah. Amiso should win the war. As Rosh Hashanah said, you don't dive into the war to end. We dive in for us to be saved. Amiso should win the war also, and clean the things up. And be'ezad Hashem, those who aren't with us anymore, it shouldn't have to be with us without us for too long.
Okay.
I'm wondering what my brother-in-law is going to do. He's not going to be here for how many weeks?
You're
suited
to be in the army.
You know, it's...
I'll be intelligent.
Oh, no, I'm intelligent. I speak full Farsi. I'm not sure.